When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Our sponsor this week is Sutton Seeds of Torquay. Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to exchange some of the latest news, views and a bit of timely advice on all things gardening. Later on, I'll be speaking to Boyd Douglas Davies, who is really at the sharp end of garden centres reopening. It's quite a move after some 7 weeks of complete shutdown. There'll be a number of problems to face. And as far as gardeners are concerned, not least the weather. You know, we usually start this little chat with what's been happening on the weather front. And 2 days ago, across the country, a frost down to -4 and -5 really is a nightmare for gardeners. Where people had potatoes well up, even under fleece, the foliage was turned black, and strawberries where they were in flower, as we mentioned just a week or two ago, that yellow centre was turned black, and I'm afraid those aren't going to produce ripe strawberries. Interestingly, one or two gardeners tell me that they have strawberries with the fruit formed and even changing colour. I mean, that's unbelievably early. They were under fleece, which would bring them on a bit, but this is a remarkably early season. And having -5 night frosts is a great horror story. I hear that in Oxfordshire, even the asparagus was just reduced to slop, you know, young shoots full of water, frozen, and then just completely killed off. In the case of the asparagus, of course, more shoots will come. And let's just hope next weekend the weather does get a little warmer, as I think it is forecast to do. On the news front, I suppose the main talking thing has to be the opening of garden centres, and it's going to create all kinds of problems, not least as far as plant supply is concerned. This is a time of year when lots of us are looking for summer flowering bedding, and of course the growers just stopped growing for those 7 weeks of shutdown, and so inevitably I'm afraid there's going to be a bit of a gap before more stuff comes online. There's plenty of hardy stuff about, hardy perennials, shrubs, trees, all that kind of thing. But it's the very seasonal petunias, begonias, geraniums, those kinds of things which could well be in short supply. Although there's some chance that in a week or two's time, much bigger specimens, plants that 6 weeks ago should have been sold and were potted on, will come available. So we'll just have to keep our fingers crossed and see the way things go. There is news coming out about a number of new plants, because given a normal year, next week would have been Chelsea Flower Show and a whole range of new plants would be introduced. I hear that the famous rose company Harkness, who've been breeding new roses since 1879, that's some heritage, isn't it, have just introduced a new rose. It's called the Phantom Rose, and it's for the Rolls-Royce Bespoke Collection. It's a fully double, white to cream, I suppose you could call it a phantom colour, looks like a very pretty rose. I've not grown it. Just chase up to find out how good it is and how much it will free flower. The government is considering a nature volunteer force, a kind of citizen's army, to monitor invasive species. It's one of a number of recommendations following the Environmental Audit Committee's report on invasive species, such as the oak processionary moth and Himalayan balsam. I mean, the first thing you need is to have spot these invasive arrivals. Until somebody spot them, you can't do much about it. So a citizen's army could be quite useful in this respect. Now the time's coming when most of the nation have a bit of a go at growing tomatoes, and so it seems timely just to talk a little bit about them. Particularly if you're new to gardening, you need to be a bit selective about the kind of tomato cultivar you're going to grow. In greenhouses, well, and in the open ground, we grow tomatoes up a single stem, cordon style, what are called indeterminate types. I'm thinking of, the very old style Shirley or Moneymaker, just grown up a single stem. But today we'd be looking for much better quality kinds. My standard is Sun Gold, a golden-coloured fruited cherry type, but with beautiful flavour. So if you've got room, got soil or a greenhouse, then look for the indeterminates. If you want to grow in pots or containers, even on a balcony, then you need the bush types. A variety called Red Alert, if you can find it anywhere, is a really good bush variety. Has a little bit larger than cherry-sized fruits, but has a good flavour too. A number of the old-fashioned bush kinds really, in my view, weren't worth eating. There are several improvements coming along, and I'm trialling a very compact, neat-habited variety called Veranda. So I'll report on that in due course. But if you are out going to a retail nursery or garden centre that are now open and looking to buy tomato plants, then the thing to do is to check the original seed leaves just above the soil, those two oval-shaped leaves. They need to be green. If they're yellow, or even worse, brown, it's an indication that the plant has been checked. Similarly, if the foliage is a bit purple, that means that they've had a really cold chill. And with a check like that, will take some little time to recover. So you're much better to shop about, perhaps wait a week or two, because as the weather gets warmer, so they'll grow faster and be much better plants to set out in your own garden or containers. Lots of tomatoes, of course, are grown in grow bags. Usually, full-size grow bag will take three plants. But if you're away at the weekend or not available to do a bit of watering pretty well daily, then if you reduce the number and just put two to a bag, then the margin for error will increase tremendously. I think for the average homeowner, if they've got a little spot of land somewhere nice and warm, particularly against a south fence or wall, and you could plant the traditional indeterminate types in the soil, you'll find that they'll be pretty easy to grow. But whatever happens, watch the forecast at night. They'll need a lot of covering up if there's a chance of another minus 4 degrees centigrade.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My guest today is Boyd Douglas Davis. Boyd, where are you today? It's quite a nice sunny day here in Essex.
I can tell you it's a gorgeous day in Carmarthen in South Wales. The sun's been shining all day. It's absolutely lovely.
Life has been a bit tricky in recent weeks. Can you set the scene for us a bit, as it's been and what's going to happen?
Yes, the last few weeks, well, 7 weeks now, we've been closed in all the garden centres in the UK. And then yesterday in Wales, we were able to open our garden centre over here. And tomorrow, we'll be able to open all the garden centres in England, in addition to the ones in Wales. But this has been a long, long, very difficult spring for the garden centre and nursery trade.
You can't really make up everything, can you?
No, I don't think we can. I think the next few weeks will be busy, but of course garden centres are going to open with all the social distancing rules in place, and that in itself will limit the number of people that can come into a garden centre each day. And we've lost 7 of the best weeks that any of us can ever remember, haven't we, from a weather perspective. It's been just such great gardening weather.
I don't remember an April like it. Unbelievable. Day after day, lovely sunny weather. Beautiful, yeah. But Boyd, you're ahead of us in Wales, so how did it go the first day or so?
It went well. It did go well, yes. We had people waiting outside in the car park before we opened yesterday, and we had the same again this morning. And there's been a steady flow of people who are so pleased to be able to get back into the garden centre and get hold of seasonal plants. And it's gone very well. People have been very good about the social distancing. The customers have kept their distance from staff and communicated at 3 or even 4 metre distances. And they've been in buying plants, compost and all their gardening goods.
And how does it actually work then? Do you have a one-way system?
Yes, you park up and then you join a queue. When you get to the head of the queue, you get given a shopping trolley which has been cleansed and is sterilised ready for you. And it's a one-way flow down through gardening to the end of the shop. You turn across the end, you come then back up the other side of the shop, and that brings you to the pay point. The floor is marked out with 2 metre markings across the carpeting. Outside, we've got markings as well and plenty of signage reminding people. We've put in the Perspex screens at the till point, because that's the one place when, of course, you get probably the closest to a member of staff when you come to pay. But we've created a nice, safe situation where you push your trolley ahead of you. You then step back. We then step forward and scan all the items and add them up for you. We step back. You step forward to pay with your credit or debit card. And then you take your goods away back out to the car park. And so you come back out in a different place to where the queue is going in. So there's complete separation from end to end.
You sound pretty well organised, Boyd, but then you always were.
We have. Thank you. Well, we knew we were going to reopen, didn't we? That was the one thing which we knew, but we just didn't know when. So we've been planning this for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah. Boyd, when I first met you, you were at the big Webb's Garden Centre in Droitwich.
I was,
Your
yes.
life has changed quite a bit, hasn't it?
Oh, yes. Yes, I was at Webb's for 20 years and enjoyed every minute of it, and a lot of good friends there still. And then I left there back in 2011, bought my first garden centre in September 11, then grew a group up in the Midlands here, really. And then I merged the whole group in with Charles Stubbs and his family. And we joined the British Garden Centres, group of garden centres, at the end of the year just gone. So, yeah, a big adventure.
That's a pretty formidable lot, British Garden Centres, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. I mean, this time last year, British Garden Centres had 16 sites in the UK and was predominantly northeast based. Charles and his brother Robert and Charles' wife Philippa had built the business up in the northeast out of Lincolnshire, where they come from, and over 30 years created this group. And then they bought up some centres in early last year from Wye Vale. And that got them to 16. And then they bought more through the summer and autumn. And then our group merged with them from September last year. And they finished the year with 57. So, yes, dramatic, dramatic change for the whole family and everybody. And we joined just at the sort of final piece.
That's not all you've got to do, is it? I mean, you have other responsibilities.
Well, I think I volunteered, or was I press ganged? I don't know how these things work. But I took on the presidency of the Horticultural Trade Association last September. You know, it's a great honour to be president of that organisation. The HTA, as we call it, is really the overarching organisation that looks after the interests of everybody in horticulture. We look after landscapers, growers, retailers. We have manufacturers, nearly 1,500 members in the UK. And, of course, it's been a very big year for the membership in many ways. So the last few weeks, of course, very traumatic.
That's almost a full-time... Well, no, it is a full-time job, trying to look after the interests of hundreds of big and small horticultural businesses. You've been lobbying hard, not just for garden centres to open, but also trying to get some support for the whole of the nursery business.
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot of nursery members, and we very quickly realised when lockdown occurred that for the nursery industry, it was absolutely catastrophic, because everything they're doing is happening for months and months in advance, and they're growing these plants. And none of us probably realised the sheer scale of the numbers until we had to actually start adding them up. The plants were being grown for the spring season. You know, the industry is so professional nowadays. It really knows the science behind plant production. And so many plants were just ready at their perfect moment to come into garden centres. Of course, the whole country shut overnight. And we all understand why, and we can see that the need for that. But instantly, the nurseries had nowhere to sell their plants. So it's not like any other production in the country. Yeah, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day. I said, I bet the minute Greggs shut their shops, they stopped making sausage rolls, didn't they? You can't stop plants growing, can you, Peter?
No.
And we suddenly realised very quickly that the nursery industry, there was nothing that could be done to change their method of getting plants to customers that would be effective. No matter how many plants were delivered by us or how many plants were sold online, it's just a drop in the ocean compared to the amount that actually go through garden centres. So overnight, their route to customer was closed down, and the plants are there on the nurseries. The biggest challenge they all had, the growers, was what do you do? Because a government scheme that allowed them to furlough the staff didn't provide them with the care they then needed to keep the plants alive. So ultimately, the business would fail. If they kept their nursery staff on, they'd have no income, but they've still got a wage bill. So the nursery would die and the business would fail. Just horrific, really. And whichever way they looked, they found themselves to be looking at dead ends.
I like the comparison with a second-hand car trade, in that if you close them down, they've still got all the cars to sell in the park.
We had to engage with government instantly. You know, we knew that there was no waiting and to see what happened. It was a conversation that had to be had straight away. And we immediately went to the various departments in government and started talking to them and made them aware of the sheer scale of it. Now, fortunately, of course, George Eustace, the minister in charge of DEFRA, actually used to work on a nursery when he was at doing his college years. His middle year was actually spent at the nursery at Bransford Webbs over in the Malverns. There was an open door in terms of his knowledge of the industry back then, but he understood that the seasonality of the plants was critical. And we're fresh produce at the end of the day, aren't we? We're growing a fresh product that has to be moved to a garden. So we worked with them really quickly. From horticultural trades, we talked to government at length in those very early days, and really explained to them that the scale of the industry, the fact they couldn't just pause everything and wait for the green light to turn the factory production line back on again, that wasn't going to happen. The need for getting those plants out there, and of course the benefit to all of us to be out there gardening. When you've got restricted travel and you can't go further afield and you can't socialise with your friends and family, actually being able to get into your garden is one of the greatest therapies, isn't it?
I think without question, but then you shouldn't ask me, should you? I'd be a bit biased.
No.
But I think even in the Conservative manifesto, they were talking about planting a million trees.
Yeah.
You have a campaign, I think, in September to see if we can't plant a million.
We do.
But you need the supply of the trees, don't you?
We do. And that was the scary thing. We could see that the long-term impact of the lockdown was going to leave us with a huge, huge reduction in the amount of nurseries in the UK. That was, it wasn't just about this spring. Of course, these guys wouldn't be here for next spring and the spring after if they didn't get the opportunity to have some trade. Tomorrow is a really welcome day for the industry and I think for the nation, based on my experience down here in Wales for the last 2 days. Customers are delighted to be in the garden centre and getting their hands on the plants, because time's running away, isn't it? If we don't get those edibles in, if you don't get your strawberry plants in, you're not going to get your crops this summer. If you don't get your tomatoes planted, you're not going to see them ripen.
You know, May, absolutely critical to us.
Yeah.
With your HCA hat on, there's the whole political situation with plant health and the import.
Well, the Xylella, that's been, you know, which was probably the biggest single challenge we were facing until this came along. And Xylella is this horrific problem that's ripped through southern Europe, devastated the south regions of Italy. It's crossed into Spain and Corsica, and it's travelled far and wide across sort of central Europe, southern countries. You know, we were really aware of this before this lockdown. And if Xylella finds its way onto a nursery or onto a garden centre, it is catastrophic. So that's been going on. And only just the other week, new regulations came in the UK for the importing of what are known to be critical host plants to Xylella. And those came in on the 21st of April. And of course, all the gardens and nurseries have been closed during this time. But it's really important that we keep focus on that, because we just cannot have that problem come across the water. You know, we have to protect our borders for that one.
And that's why we need a really strong home production nursery business.
Oh, yeah. If we'd lost these growers now, then horticulture would not look the same for years, if ever, to come, would it? I think this spring, summer, we're going to see gardens will look a little bit different. Yeah, there's going to be plant shortages in the short term. The growers had to take decisions about whether to grow on some of the seasonal plants. So I think when customers have come in today, they found a great selection of plants, but not necessarily all the plants they were looking for when they walked through the door. People will have to accept that actually this is the season to try something new. And if you can't find the plants you've always had, well, try something different this year and see how that suits your garden. And keep supporting the British plant production, because by golly, it got touch and go the last couple of weeks.
To end on a slightly brighter note, they say that if you want something done, give it to a busy man. And you also are a bit involved with a charity called Greenfingers.
Yeah, I am. You're right. I'm a trustee of Greenfingers, which is a wonderful charity in its 21st year. Greenfingers does this wonderful thing, which is it creates gardens for children in hospices, which is often the last place that a hospice can afford to spend money on when they've built a new unit or something. They find they're looking out of the window onto, at best, maybe a patch of grass and at worst, a rubble left by the builders when they've gone. So Greenfingers raises money from across the country. We've built 55 gardens so far, and every one of them is a wonderful.
I mean, that's amazing, isn't it?
I think I remember being at the launch day. The concept was to do this for a year then and to build some gardens. And 21 years later, little did we know that we'd have gone from a couple of gardens to 55. And the gardens have evolved so much since we started. In the early days, they were beautiful gardens, relaxing places to go to. Then we started realising that actually some fun and water features and playground equipment would be really appreciated. So we started to incorporate that into the gardens. And from there, we created covered space for treatment or reflection and tranquility, places for children to run around with brothers and sisters and parents and grandparents. So the gardens have evolved into a really fundamental part of the hospice and the service that they provide. So it's been incredible.
It is wonderful work. I remember going to one in Cambridge and a mother telling me that she was there for respite and had the first undisturbed night's sleep for 12 weeks.
Wow, gosh. Well, I met a young lad whose sister had sadly passed away in a hospice, but he was a little lad from London who came up to me at and he said, are you the man that built my garden that my sister died in? And in his one sentence, the garden my sister died in, that he said with a happy look on his face, it wasn't sad, he wasn't remembering the hospice and the equipment and all the environment that comes with what his sister needed. He just remembered the garden. And I thought, actually, that's what we're doing, is we're leaving people with memories. It just changes that last few days for people sometimes, or provides, as you say, good respite. So we've learned a lot as we've gone along. We'll build some more gardens. I'm not sure how many will get built now this year, because time will dictate that more than anything. But we'll carry on and make sure they keep on doing the good work. But yeah, that fills a bit of my week as well. But
Boyd, I feel guilty at keeping you away from that one-way system at Carmarthen. Thanks very much, Boyd.
No, it's a pleasure talking to you, Peter, as always.
For my end piece, I've got a quote from Nigel Colburn. I share one or two gardening cruises with Nigel and Roz. He has a great sense of humour and a pretty good gardener too. And Nigel says, after forking muck all day, the Après Compost hot bath is doubly rewarding. I say, amen to that. I'm just in the process of emptying my compost heap. There's some pretty good stuff in the bottom of it too. I'll be using that to mulch over some well-watered soil to try and hold the moisture in. And after I've spent several hours on the end of a curved-tined fork emptying out the compost heap, a warm bath would be very welcome. My thanks to our sponsor, Sutton Seeds of Torquay. Look forward to chatting to you again next week. Stay safe.